page 59 of the Agent's Handbook. When in doubt, hide the amulet in the carcass of the Rottweiler you killed. Says it right here. Black and white. So I don't want to hear that it was crazy. It's expected of us.
It's normal. Everyone does it.
Have you ever heard of a little thing called tradecraft?
You don't put a Rottweiler in the scenario if we're not going to use it like the book says to use it.
Yeah, as a bomb, which is how we were going to use it.
Bomb / amulet storage.
Yeah.
By the book.
By
standard operating procedure.
And like
we
said,
our man's best friend.
Case closed, and we solved it, and we got it. And
case has been solved. It's over.
Next adventure.
This is just a recap / like e-network kind of reflection on that past season.
Welcome to the Delta Green Debrief.
It's all over. Yeah. I mean, you guys, you got it. You figured it all out. It was just a classic. I mean, day one, FBI Academy training. You know, the amulet in the dog, put a grenade in there.
The amulet in the dog to me felt like an escape room where we just start destroying the room. The only way to get out is to actually take the door off the hinges. That is the way to get out of the escape room.
I'm not playing your games anymore.
Just start kicking the door as hard as you can.
My wife once received a warning when we did an escape room for being too aggressive with some of the equipment. They literally opened the door, which I thought ruined the
immersion.
Ruined the immersion, and they were like, "We told you, you do not have to damage any of the items to get out of the room." And she was like, "I'm sorry, Jesus."
How many points on her license until it gets revoked? Escape room again.
We told you, you don't need to rip wood paneling off the walls to find something hidden behind it,
like pulling out the nails. And
yeah. Oh man. You know what? I'm going to jump in because I don't want to even ask you guys if you feel like you're getting somewhere or if you feel like you have your heads wrapped around what's happening.
I just got a text from Caitlin. I can hear you. She says,
"Oh no, she's going to kick the door down."
She can't be contained. You got to look out.
Do you know how strong her legs are after all those Pelotons? Jesus.
She does have a reputation for being very aggressive.
Oh, no.
Well, last time, I thought the most important thing that was going to happen was you guys really putting together this case against this fictional person who I don't even remember if you've named, but this person who you are going to present to the Glen Ridge Police Department as being the murderer, the Glen Ridge chiropractor, the person that pulled off these horrific crimes. And, you know, we can get into it, but it, you know, had something to do with Northrop Grumman and they were a disgruntled employee, et cetera.
I'd like to name him Keaton Michaels.
Michaels.
Yeah. And we can nickname him in the press, the Batman. Because of the elevation that he used to drop people.
Things, people.
Yeah. Keaton Michaels.
Batman.
I love it. And I thought that was going to be sort of the most important thing that happened, in that episode as you guys planned to move forward. And then the sun goes down rather early. It's February in Long Island and it's dark out and Jordy and Gavin decide to sneak away from the party to perform an occult ritual alone in the woods with a clay tablet that they found in a Winnebago in a auto salvage lot near the Pine Barrens.
You're making it seem so very unclassy.
Yeah. Yeah, you're making it sound stupid. There was plenty of good reason for us to do what we did at the time. We felt...
My point is
like a lot of like other interesting shady stuff in there that made it seem real legit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, wasn't just a random wrecked Winnebago.
That's true. That's true. I did sell it kind of poorly. I sort of sold it as a second-rate Mesopotamian artifact. 5,000-year-old artifact. But the fact is that you dropped to the ground unconscious, and what we don't know is if you dropped because you got a second-rate clay tablet from this Winnebago, or if you dropped because it was the real thing. You know, it could go either way. But let's pick up from there as, you know, last episode, we fade out on those, that image of Jordy and Gavin, just sort of laying there, probably dead, and they becoming the next mission. So let's fade up on a motel room. There's light coming through the curtains, the shoddy curtains, giving some light to the room as we see it's Monday morning. Daylight has come in, and we pan over the bed and we see Gavin asleep in bed. And he just snaps awake. Some distant memory of performing a disturbing ritual in the woods with Jordy. Maybe it didn't happen at all. Maybe it did. Looking around at himself, first thing I want you to do is roll 1d6 power, heal 1d6 power. For rest.
2.
Okay. So do you remember how much power you took? How much damage you took?
3. So does that affect my score, or does that affect my score times 5?
It affects your score, your willpower score.
So I was down to a 9 on power.
Yeah, on power. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It doesn't affect your power. It affects your willpower points, which are equal to your power.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
so I get to keep my...
Yeah. So your power stays the same. That represents your max. And just to be clear, there's a lot of different ways that this can work, because rituals are very cool, and they're very complicated, and there's a lot of different kinds. This is a very specific ritual that is... of my own design, and it has these elements to it that are there's a crafting element which comes from the book, and then the actual engaging in the ritual. So like crafting the tablet is a whole different thing that is like covered in the book, and that is that, because I was getting confused as you were saying it, Matthew. I was like, wait, is it willpower? Is it power? The way that I'm running it, doing the ritual is more about life force and life energy, and draws on your willpower points. So it's sort of a temporary thing as part of activation. It's really cool stuff, and a fun thing to get into. And it's crazy to think like how little we've just scraped the surface of this game, because, you know, the little bits we've seen, you know, this kind of ritual, this is the first time we're seeing anything like this. And there are dozens and dozens and dozens of them in the book. So it's like, there's a lot of really cool shit for how this all works. But anyway, I just wanted to put that out there for anybody that's familiar with the system. It's like, you can take these rituals and kind of like make them tailored to what you need. This is what you guys are suffering. So as Gavin wakes up, and what did you say? He healed 2?
Healed 2, willpower but I points? Took 3. So I'm still down 1.
Okay, cool. So, you wake up and you feel, yeah, like that. How do you think that manifests? That 1 point of willpower just like not coming back. You wake up, it's almost like a nightmare. Does he feel like it really happened, or does he not know?
I guess if there's still that 1 point there, it's almost like, did I dream that? Is that real? Like, he's like examining his body to see if there's anything. If he hurt himself, like, he took 2 points of damage, so he's still in pain too. Like, there's right. some, like, there's the wound on his hand. So yeah, he's like, yeah.
Well, that reminds me. So go ahead and roll. You got a good night's rest in a bed, inside. So go ahead and give me a constitution times 5 check. If you right. roll under your constitution times 5, you will heal a hit point.
I did not roll under it.
Okay.
56 so, over 50.
56 over 50. Okay, so it just stays. And so, yeah, Gavin's just not sure what happened. Let's look in on Jordy. What's Jordy doing? Do you think that he got some sleep?
I mean, not knowing what happened.
As well as he ever does.
Yeah, I think he got as much sleep. I don't think he sleeps very much. He can't get a full night's sleep almost ever because he wakes up coughing.
Right.
And nightmares, whatever. So I think he wakes up in bed.
Yeah. He wakes up in bed and he has no memory of getting back there. So it's like he did this ritual and it just all of a sudden he wakes up in bed. And that's why it's sort of like it's strange. Your body's trying to understand if it really happened or not. Your mind is trying to understand.
Yeah. And then he remembers in that moment looking out the window at the frost on the trees, maybe snow on the ground. And he thinks to himself the words that his father would say growing up in the Bronx. It's like, it may be winter on Long Island, but it's always summer in Mesopotamia.
Good Sumerian joke. I love it.
It's always summer. Oh, boy.
Yankees Stadium bathroom.
That's right.
Did you roll willpower heal?
Not yet. Three. So
and do you remember what you had lost? Okay, so you lost four?
Yeah.
All right, so down one going into the next day. Monday morning, you guys get up, and your original intention was to go to the Glenridge Police Department and sort of present this evidence. Is that still what you want to do?
Yeah, well, Magdalena has her meeting, so she's up and at him making coffee, a little nervous, but, like, pretty confident that the team has come together and we have each other's backs, and she's like, all right, yeah, we have our evidence.
Do we need to do anything to get our stories straight in case any of them ask us something about corroborating?
Magdalena slaps Caesar. Oh, God.
We have our story straight. Focus.
can't wait to throw her under the bus.
I slap him again.
She's the murderer.
No, wait. We should talk about that, though.
No, it's okay.
You slap me. Go to hell.
I'm gonna operate under the assumption that you guys have a story and you're okay. All sticking to it.
Yeah, Jordy crafted the story.
Yeah,
with his writing ability.
Heck yeah.
Correct. And so
it's
that means
airtight. It's the most beautifully plotted thing he's ever created.
I threw in a little legal jargon to make it sound really official.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've been running through our scripts all night.
Yeah.
We've been running lines.
Yeah, I've been running lines all night. We are ready.
Just role playing. Gavin just like leaning over the hotel desk, like, I don't believe you. Caesar's in the other room. He's ready to give you up.
Shuts his briefcase.
I'm going to operate under the assumption that you guys are on the same page. You have your story. You're sticking to it. Unless somebody's just going to suddenly turn, you all are going to have the same story if interrogated in that fashion. Is there anything else that you would want to do in the morning before going to the police department?
If there's anything on those tapes, that's been on Caesar's mind that we found in there. But if it just seems unrelated, he'll like put in one, listen to 5 minutes of it. If it's like, he's not going to spend like hours going through it, but like the tapes we found in the Winnebago, he was interested in.
Yeah. Well, the tapes are in the Winnebago.
Okay.
Unless you brought them all with you and a cassette player, which I don't think you did.
No, we just,
so they're in the Winnebago. Remember, you had to kind of hustle out of there.
True.
Okay. And so they're in there, but I can tell you that just from a generic standpoint, like if you want to explore those, there's shit in there, but you know, it was a pile of a lot of random crap.
Right.
So it's
right.
More likely than not that it's not relevant, but you never know what you can stumble across in Delta Green.
Did we notice anything weird last night? I'm assuming we were all in bed and none the wiser to Jordy and Gavin, but like, are they weird? Are they acting weird? I'm assuming we get coffee together and are talking.
It's a good question. So Jordy, you look for the tablet and you find it where, you know, in your hotel room where you think you would have put it, whether it's, you know, in a coat pocket or in a drawer or whatever. It's there and it's wrapped in brown paper with the instructions and everything on it. It's there. Do you open it up?
Yeah.
You untwine and open up the paper bag again, and you look at the tablet, and it appears unchanged from what it was before. That bloodstain that you saw before is still there. You can actually see it on Roll 20 if you want. And it seems that nothing has changed to it.
So I don't remember anything that quote unquote happened after we bled on this thing.
Correct. You bled on it, you started to feel lightheaded, and then you started to hear a voice in your head that was sort of saying, let go. Like, it was basically like, you know, Jordy's sick, man. He's fighting every day to stay alive. Yeah. And he knows, and you said it in one of these episodes, you're just like, working on one, buddy. When Roger talked about kill count, it's like, yeah, you're working on it, but you still get up every morning. You still get out there and do this shit every day. This was the most tempting experience you had had yet to just leave this mortal coil. You remember that. But right after, you know, right as that blood hit and you started to feel lightheaded and you had that weird feeling, you black out and you wake up in bed.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. So I guess I mean, it would be expected that something weird could happen where we might lose time. Like, that wouldn't be... It's like we're performing an occult ritual. So it's... I think he would still suspect that this really happened, but not to know what happened after that point is a little distressing. So he just ties up the tablet again and steps outside, gets his like oxygen compressor and his jacket, and just goes outside to meet the others.
Does he carry it with him? Does he put it like in his pocket where it was before?
Yeah, back in his jacket pocket.
In his jacket pocket. Great. Okay, so is everybody going to meet up and go to Glenridge PD?
Yeah, Gavin is wearing his wearing a suit again and with a tie, and he's freshly shaved.
Okay,
and he's very jumpy, but he's got a bandage. He's got a big old Band-Aid across his palm, but he's trying to hide it in his pocket.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that leads you to believe that what you did out there actually happened. You know what effect it actually had. You don't really know, but like, there's a cut on your hand. And so it wasn't all a dream.
Roger gets up early, and he's out the door, and he comes back around 9:20. That's okay, all I'm going to say.
What time did he leave?
8:15.
Like pre-dawn? Okay, so the sun was up, he left, and then he came back. He was gone about an hour or something like that, but we don't know where. All right, he comes back, so it's, you know, between 9 and 10 a.m. You know Magdalena, they're expecting you, you know, around now, around 10 a.m.-ish. I don't know if I said 9 to start, but it doesn't matter. It could be 10, that's fine. So you guys want to head over?
Yeah.
Okay, you head over to the Glenridge PD, and things are similar to the first time that you got there. It's a Monday morning. There is plenty of people there, and it's busy. You get in, and you're initially greeted by the watch commander, who, you know, you say your business, and he ushers you through to speak to Detective Gregson, who is, you know, the one that wanted to ask Magdalena about this stuff. You're taken back, and you see she's there and ready to chat. You come in, and she says, Oh, you're all here. I was just expecting Magdalena. Is everything okay?
Detective, we've had a bit of a breakthrough in the case. We can absolutely still discuss Dangler, and if he's here, if he wants to talk, I'm completely open to that. But we also need to talk with you.
The chiropractor case. Okay. you know what? I want to devote a little bit more of my time to that. So why don't we just get this out of the way first? And then we can talk about what evidence you have here. I'm excited to hear about it. But first, can you and I just speak alone?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Well, just be a minute. You can hang out here at my desk. And you see, it's kind of like a bunch of desks all kind of like mashed together. And she allows you guys to stay there. You're seated across from that guy, Philip Thomas, her Detective Thomas, her partner. He's just sitting across from you. And he's just kind of like looking over, doing his work. And she takes you into a sort of a back interrogation room. Closes the door. She's got some paperwork with her, and she's like, I appreciate you coming in. This is just going to be really a formality, unless there's, you know, anything related here between the two cases, which I haven't seen yet, but I do want to discuss your whereabouts, just to get it on the record here, and she puts a little recorder down, your whereabouts on the evening of Saturday, early evening Saturday, February 25th. I can't remember the date. I think that's right. She gets it right. And she says, where were you around 7 p.m.? And she's just sort of like, has a notepad out.
Oh, it's so intimate. I feel scared. Sydney feels scared.
You've been in this position before, haven't you, Sydney?
Of course. I'm unfortunately very familiar with interrogation rooms. No. Magdalena is calm as a cucumber. And she just goes, right. Yeah, 7 p.m. I was with my team. We were probably just getting into Manhattan, or maybe we were leaving Manhattan. We had gone to B&H.
And why were you at B&H?
We needed one of my computers was on the fritz. I was trying to actually look at the CCTV footage for the chiropractor case, and it kind of blew up my laptop at the time, which led us to look further into it, which we'll talk about later.
Did you buy anything at B&H? Because if we could get like a receipt or anything like that, it would make it just so easy.
I could check. I believe Caesar possibly had put it on his own card. I would have to ask him if he has a record.
Okay. You arrived back in town around what time?
I look at my phone. Let me just check the call log really quick. And I look at my phone of when Gregson called Magdalena. And she said she was like going through the tunnel or whatever. And she kind of guesstimates that time. She says, I think when you'd called, we were going through a tunnel. So I would say 30 minutes after that.
Okay. Thomas Dengler, as you know, came in and said that I was rather adamant that he saw you on the street around 7 p.m., do you know why he would say that?
Honestly, I can't think of a reason unless he saw someone who looked like me, but he had just seen me the day before. And honestly, and I didn't want to say this in front of his mom at the time, but I gave him my card and I told him to call me if there was any problems at home because he didn't look... well, he didn't look well rested. He had been out of school.
Yes, I remember. You told me to keep an eye on him, and I found that to be a strange coincidence that you had told me to keep an eye on him, that you had gone and questioned him in relation to the Glen Ridge chiropractor case, and then, you know, he ends up saying he saw you and is mugged. It's just a strange series of events. So
were you able to find out anything about the mugger? I think this might be a cry for attention. If he's not getting it at home and he's not getting it in school.
No. Well, naming you is what's strange. Perhaps it is a cry for attention in some way there. But from what I've seen, and it's not my case per se, I'm just sort of gathering information from my colleague here. But from what I understand, no, it is not a cry for help. And the item that was stolen apparently is extremely valuable. But we had a few people here yesterday asking about it. Again, it was
an item that was stolen. They didn't just take his phone or his wallet.
He had a necklace that apparently was very old. It was like in his family for a very long time. A representative was here from the American Museum of Natural History yesterday, and was talking to the detective about it. And I know they went to his house to ask a few more questions. So it seems like whatever it was very valuable. And now I think that they're looking into it as kind of a, like an art heist almost, because somebody knew that he had something rather valuable. It's turning out to be something rather serious, and that's why I was asked to interview you, because I know who you are and I know why you were brought into town. I brought you into town, and so I just wanted to make sure that we could clear your name in involvement with this, because it's looking like we're talking about a, I don't know, priceless item. That is sort of the way people have been talking about it, so...
Wow. Yeah, now I understand why this was so formal. I was kind of wondering what the
I mean,
big
normally
deal
this,
was.
This kind of thing would go, you know, just, you know, beyond my notice, really. But this is something that has gotten, it's working its way up the chain. There's a lot of money involved here, I think.
Wow. I wish I could be more of a help to you. I mean, my team, I would say, oh, we'll look into it, but we kind of have our hands full with the chiropractor case as is.
Yeah, it's okay. And she turns off the recorder. She's like, I think I have what we need here. We'll have anybody talk to your team if they need corroboration, an alibi for where you were, and we'll also, if you could get me those receipts from B&H that correlate with the time frame, then it, you know, it should all work out. But in the meantime, let's talk to your team about this crack in the chiropractor case. That is the top on my priority list. So, and she grabs the recorder, grabs her files. She has taken a few notes during this conversation, and she comes walking out of the room. And you guys all see her come out. Is there, during this conversation, was there anything you guys were doing out there, or are you all just kind of like sitting quietly playing on your phones?
I don't know.
Gavin keeps stealing looks at Jordy to be like that, like see if he's okay, see if that really happened, or like,
do you feel
he doesn't want to say anything?
I think it's, I like flash my palm with the scar on it to him and be like, eh? What? Eh?
Gavin just kind of like shrugs, like.
Roger's sitting there and he just says, Fifth Avenue.
What?
Sorry?
Really craving a Fifth Avenue bar. I'm gonna go see if they have one in the vending machine. And then he walks over to the vending machine, and he walks by the desk of that other cop who kind of shunned us the first time we came in. Goes over to the vending machine, looks. Is there a Fifth Avenue as an option in the vending machine?
No, Troy. Fifth Avenue in the vending machine.
It's New York.
There's a Kit Kat.
There's no, nothing with peanut or nougat?
A payday. What? Why would there be a Fifth Avenue
there's
bar?
There's a Three Musketeers if you want a lot of nougat.
But there's no nuts in that.
Yeah, that's not good.
There's a Snickers.
No, well, there's Snickers.
Oh.
All right, he slips a bill in, and is... He's agonizing over this decision as much as I am.
Staring at the vending machine.
He's staring, staring at it for too long.
Everyone kind of is like starting to like notice that there's this hulking menace standing in front of the vending machine, just staring at the glass.
Trademark intensity, just staring at this vending machine.
Staring daggers.
Ex-Green Beret.
He's staring daggers at an empty like hook, F1, because he just knows that Fifth Avenue was there.
That's where it was.
And he turns to that cop and he goes, what do you think? Three Musketeers or Snickers?
Detective Thomas looks up at you and is just like, I don't know, man. Whatever you want.
Yeah, whatever I want. All right. I'll get a bag of chips. The chips come out down the bottom. He pops them open. Just kind of leans against the vending machine. We haven't had a chance to meet. We could have, but you were too busy. Eat the chip.
Yeah, I had to go home. It was the end of the day. You came late.
What do you do, 8 hours? Clock in, clock out? That kind of thing?
In the office, yeah. But there's a lot that goes on outside the office as well, so.
You know what job you don't get to clock in and out of?
What's that?
Being a soldier.
Oh, yeah? Be a soldier?
I was. I just can't look at the Zoom.
So,
yeah, I was.
So you clocked out then?
I guess you could say that. Honorably discharged.
Where'd you serve?
Over there.
No. Then you remember your answer is, where didn't I serve?
Where didn't I serve?
To which I think I responded, okay, where didn't you serve? And you still didn't answer. I think this was a conversation you had with Gregson, I feel like. Or maybe Carson.
He doesn't like to talk about it. He'll talk around it.
Yeah.
Over there. Middle East. Desert Storm.
Troy's fake eating chips.
Still eating the chips.
For like past 10 minutes, Troy's been fake eating chips.
So you say you got a break in the Glen Ridge chiropractic case, huh?
Oh, now you're interested in us and our knowledge.
I'm just trying to make small talk.
Yeah. Yeah, we might have...
You seemed like you were kind of drifting off there.
I was just thinking how nice it must be to clock out after a hard day's work, go home to a warm bed, maybe a wife, a couple of kids, get to lean back and watch Johnny Carson.
Johnny Carson?
You know Johnny Carson's dead, right?
That's what they say. Anyway, yeah, we got a break in the case. In fact, I think it's all tied up in a nice little bow.
All right, then. Detective Gregson will be happy to hear it.
What about you? Will you be happy when this is all taken care of?
Yeah, I'll be happy when the real killer's off the street. But, if you don't mind me saying, I just don't operate under the assumption that you people know what you're talking about. So just because you say this is who it is, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to clock in, and I'm going to follow all the evidence to make sure we have a solid indictment before we start talking about case closed around here. Just so you know what I do.
Oh, good, good. Might mean you might have to stay after 5 p.m., do a little overtime. You know? Do some real police work.
Yeah, real police work is the only thing that's going to get this done. Not federal, political, let me just close this to make it look good to my boss. That's not how it works. On the street. Mm.
Thanks for the lesson.
Anytime.
He crumples up the bag, and he's like, one more thing.
Throws it at the cop's face.
Go, one more thing. Fuck, buddy. Pick that up.
So contentious.
Crumples up the bag, and he throws it in the barrel. He's like,
might want to restock that with some Fifth Avenues. Then he walks back to the break room.
It's not my job. And then Gregson comes out with Magdalena. They walk back over, and she's like, "All right, let's hear this," and pulls you guys into that same meeting room. Actually, she pulls you into a meeting room as opposed to the roll call room that she had you in before, and she brings Detective Thomas in this time. Both of them are sort of ready to take notes, etc., and they ask you to go over the details of this idea. So who's taking the lead here? Who's doing the talking? Is it a Gavin operation?
It can be Gavin. Yeah.
He's looking all clean cut.
Clean cut. Got my briefcase.
Except for the bandage on his hand.
Well, he's hiding that.
From that occult ritual last night.
Don't know. I can neither confirm nor deny any occult ritual took place last night. Okay. I have no knowledge of this.
You literally can't?
Literally can't. Gavin will pull out all the evidence that we assembled, all the stuff that Jordy worked on, the stuff that Caesar was able to, and Caesar Magdalena were able to fake records mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. using our bureaucratic knowledge, and walk the detective through everything, and then, you want me to roll
Northrop
on that?
Northrop Grumman.
Yeah.
I knew it. She turns to Detective Thomas. He turns, looks at her, doesn't seem to acknowledge. He's just looking at all this stuff you're laying down in front of him, all this paperwork, and you can see he's eyeing it all very, very suspiciously.
It was a good hunch. It was a good hunch, Detective. Wouldn't have been my first instinct, but you planted that idea in her head, and we just ran it down. You know, just old-fashioned police work, as they say.
And Magdalena chimes in, too, and she's like, yeah, honestly, I had discounted Northrop Grumman until I looked into the CCTV footage, and like I said before, it blew up my laptop, and that's when we started thinking this might be technology, you know, not just a person, but they have the tech to back it up, and we went for Northrop Grumman, and it all just started to fall into place.
Does this person, does this Keaton Michaels have any, were you able to find out in your research at all if he would, or when he died?
And Gavin makes a show of exchanging glances with everybody, and he's like, unfortunately, Detective, I think that's where we reached the edge of our pay grade, if you know what I mean. Looks like Mr. Michaels was working on some pretty highly classified materials and some projects. Unfortunately, it looks like that equipment was involved in his demise, and so we've been, it's about as far as this road will go. Otherwise, it's going to have to go down a different road marked federal.
Thomas looks at you. Detective Thomas looks at you, just shakes his head. Looks at her, shakes his head. She says, hold off a second. All right, well, maybe we can't go down that road, like you said. Maybe it's going to lead to a bunch of classified information, but that doesn't mean we can't look at some of these side roads, right? We can't try to find a different connection here. I mean, look, I still think that this Thomas Dengler thing really stinks. I think that the idea that this incredibly valuable artifact is on this kid randomly is chosen to be mugged in town, it doesn't seem so random to me. And you're telling me that this guy is working with all manner of high level technologies, and I don't know, is there anything in these papers that says this guy has anything to do with look, I'm coming back to, I can't get out of my head, Magdalena, is you telling me that somebody could hack a phone, could send him a text message from one of the victims? I mean, wouldn't it stand to reason that he had her phone, or was able to hack her phone with his high level technical expertise? But what would he want with Thomas Dengler? What would he want with this necklace? Maybe it's connected in some way to this technology.
You know,
Sorry, Magdalena. I just want to make sure we're on the same page here, because I'm having trouble following the thread. Your theory is that a 16-year-old boy was able to utilize advanced technology to somehow murder a dentist, a teacher, girl?
No, you misunderstood me. I'm saying that, is it this Keaton Michael that also was behind the mugging?
Michaels.
Keaton Michaels. Sorry. This Keaton Michaels, was he behind the mugging? Did he want this artifact for whatever high power technology he was using? I mean, I don't know why those things would be connected, but you know, maybe they are. Look, the way that those people acted when they were here yesterday was just, it was intense. That's the best way that I can put it. Whoever these high level art museum people are, they're going to get the feds involved in this. You know, you guys are consultants, but they're going to get the actual feds involved. I know they are, and they're going to try to track down where this thing is. So it might lead them to this guy. So is this information you think we should be sharing with that investigation?
Gregson, and I would assume Magdalena fills the team in on what Gregson had said in that private room, because technically the team does not know that Thomas Dengler had a priceless artifact that got mugged. We just knew that he got mugged. So she explains that, and she says, Detective, this is all new information to us. I had no idea about this artifact. This sort of, yes, changes things. I can definitely look into the phone hacking. I can absolutely follow up on that. I mean, it's possible. It's possible. The tech was advanced. I mean, it would absolutely be able to hack a phone. I'm wondering if now, yes, maybe this was the final outcome, was this artifact. You said it was a necklace, right?
Yeah, a necklace of some kind, yeah.
I think we should look into that, Gavin.
I mean, I wouldn't want to squash a good idea. Obviously, Detective Gregson, it was your idea to crack this case wide open, so I don't want to be a bean counter or anything like that. I'll leave that to the accountants. But I believe we're only contracted for this murder case, though. So I don't want to, you know, this seems like your guys' domain. If you want to engage the Bureau on, you know, bringing in some experts for art theft, did you say you think there's a case of art theft? But yeah, I mean,
well, that's how they're treating it now.
I can refer you to the agent in charge. He can say, you know, he can find some people who are more with a greater level of expertise in the art heist arena.
You know what? He's absolutely right. He's absolutely right, Anna. This is just... we're not going to be able to move forward with this. I think that this work here, we can take this and we'll follow up on it. We thank you very much for everything you pulled together here. If it actually carries any weight, it looks like we'll be able to pin this on this guy, but we just need to, we need a body. We need, you know, there's a few things that we have to look into, but this is definitely a good start. And I think that, it goes without saying, like Gavin said, Detective, that this is beyond the purview of the FBI, at least this particular group of consultants. I think if they are actually dealing with a theft here, then it's going to have to cross state lines. It's going to have to be a lot of other stuff going on for the FBI to properly get involved. So for right now, this murder case is where it needs to be. I think that you have you've done all you can, and I think you're right. I think that we can close at least your part in this, and you'll be paid, and you can head back to Washington feeling like you did your job.
You know, I'm no policeman, but Gavin, didn't you say the kid's father worked at the same place where our suspect worked?
Oh, yeah. What was it? Dengler... I don't remember.
Mark, I believe.
Mark Johnny, Dengler, right?
Johnny Dengler?
Yes, Mark. Mark Dengler. Yeah.
Mark! Mark Dengler.
Yeah, we did notice that. We ran it down. He seems to be totally unconnected. Obviously, Northrop Grumman is a pretty large organization.
Yeah, no. He's probably unconnected, but... And I'm just... Again, I'm not a policeman. But maybe this... Mark Dengler was talking about this rare heirloom that has been passed down through the family, talking about that in the break room and whatnot. And maybe our perp overheard this and thought this would be a great chance to get in there, steal a little art, make a little money on the side, so he can get away after committing some murders. I don't know. Again, I'm not a policeman.
Roger. Don't give away your expertise for free, right?
That's right, Mr. Officer here is very interested, Roger, in getting us paid.
That's pretty impressive. That's some good detective work, because I'll tell you, even we didn't know that it was a family heirloom passed down through generations. That's interesting. Where'd you come up with that idea?
Gregson did tell me that, which I passed along to my team. Apparently,
you passed along to your team in the time that you didn't speak with them from when we walked out of the room to walking in here. Did you know
Magdalena,
a little bit about this artifact before the meeting with Detective Gregson? And
Magdalena,
she's like, Phil, take it easy. He's just like, no, I think that there's an honest question here. How do you know that this is a family heirloom?
Magdalena turns to him, dagger blue eyes with her black hair, super pale skin, and she goes, I'm sorry. Can I help you? We haven't met, and to be honest, you haven't had a foot in this investigation as we have been on the streets. If you have a fucking problem, I will go outside with you and we can talk about this like real adults. But if you don't have a problem, then shut your mouth.
Oh, man.
I think we're done here.
Yeah, I think we are. And I turn to Gregson and I go, if you need to talk, you have my number. And I turn back to him and turn back to her, sort of giving her the eyes of, like, control your fucking partner.
He's going to stand up and walk out and immediately make a phone call. she'll say, sorry, I don't know. Magdalena, that was a little uncalled for. It's a little bit unprofessional. You could just simply answer the question, Roger, how did you know that it was a family heirloom?
Just speculating. You said that it was very important. What'd you say? It was worth a lot of money? Or was I not in that conversation?
No, Roger, you weren't in that conversation either.
Well, I was just speculating. Just like I'm speculating that this... was it Johnny Dengler?
Right. Can you please roll persuasion for me? Was it Johnny Dengler?
Speculating that he might have been talking about it.
I also want to just say there's a little crossover here between Troy as a person and Roger as a person, since Troy also calls every dude whose name he can't remember Johnny.
Yeah, you know, Johnny and Steve.
Johnny or Steve.
All right, I've got the base 20 for persuasion.
Oh dear!
How about survival?
My goodness,
this is a survivable moment.
Can you spend points? I rolled a 22, which is technically a crit fail, and that's only 2 points over 20. Oh, so, come on.
You're on my team, but it feels like justice has been served this day.
She says, okay. Sounds good. You know what? I think you're right. I think I'll talk to Agent Carson, and we'll say that your work here is wrapped up. We'll pursue this lead, put the bows on it. I don't think we could find anything stronger than this at this stage. And Gavin, you are right. This isn't our business getting involved in this other investigation. So I think I'll just leave it at that. Thank you so much for all the work that you've put in here. And I hope that we can work this all out. And she seems, Caesar, you know, that she suspects something.
Yeah.
But she's just trying to end the conversation and get out of there.
Caesar has been, like, just shaking this whole time. And whenever a phone goes off or, like, a door opens, he just, like, is kind of snapping at it because he's having flashbacks to when the trunk opened and the grenade almost exploded. And he thought he was far enough away from the trunk to avoid, like, a concussive blast of the frag grenade. But he had a brush with death and his sanity is on his edge. And he just leans in and says, listen, lady. Because he's lost it. He's lost all compunction, all of his charm in this moment. He says,
I've only been with these people for a little while, but you keep on digging a hole like this, you might find yourself 10 feet deep, unable to climb out, and with nothing in your hand to show for it but a shovel and some dirt.
And he walks out.
And a dead Rottweiler. And then Roger walks out.
She writes down, dead Rottweiler.
Magdalena just quietly...
Just good old-fashioned police work.
Case closed. Magdalena quietly says to Gregson, sorry for losing my temper. Nothing against your partner. Just, it's been a hell of a week. And, yeah. And she walks out.
Gregson just nods, takes it in, writes down in her notes, hell of a week.
Jordy gets up and he says, Heaton Michaels grew up in Pittsburgh. He had a very difficult childhood. Father was a priest, fell in love with a nun. They both dropped out of their respective callings. The marriage didn't last. And, anyway,
he's just very proud of the backstory he wrote.
Yeah, yeah, he clearly wants to get the backstory out.
Yeah, he's like, I gotta go. And he just leaves.
Just how often does Jordy get to work without an editor? Like,
is yeah, an operator pros? An editor breathing down his neck. It's like, so liberating.
She writes down, Keaton, Pittsburgh, question mark. Priest, none.
Gunman standing there awkwardly, and he's like, well, Detective,
he's the last one left of there. She's like, yeah, a receiving line of PCs.
Leaving one by
everyone
one.
Wants to get their little line in with the NPC.
It's been a pleasure meeting you and working with you, and glad that the threat is past, and Glenridge can go back to being back to normal, and everyone can feel safe again.
Gavin, I just want to say, it's only been a few days, but it's pretty clear that she looks around. That you're the professional of the group.
It's very kind.
You know, it has a little to do with your charm and a little to do with your communication skills, which honestly I think some of your team could use some work on.
You know, you can always say these things to the Bureau, right? Like, you can always, like, a comment card, you know, there's, we welcome feedback.
Oh, I'm going to let Carson know what I think. Oh. Definitely.
Cool.
I just one more question.
Sure.
Do you think, and I'm just asking you, your gut feeling, your hunch, is there a connection here between the robbery of Thomas Dengler and Keaton Michaels?
Gavin looks around, looks both ways. You want to know what I really think?
What?
He leans in like he wants to keep his voice really low. Some of the stuff they're working on over at Northrop Grumman. It's pretty terrifying. I think. Is it related? I don't know. I think. You got out of the scare. There was a really, really, like, three murders. With what this, I'm looking at this guy's profile. he refers to Jordy's notes. Like, looking at this guy's profile, could have been a lot worse. With what he had access to and what he was dealing with, are they connected? I can't say. But I think, listen, we're not here for the glory. Take your victory lap, Detective. You closed the case. You saved a lot of people's lives. With that hunch. Can I roll persuade to kind of like to really like
damage control for Roger?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yes, you can roll persuade. Yeah.
Okay, I just got it. 79 under 80.
Oh, you have an 80 persuade?
I'm a law student. I'm going to be an excellent litigator.
Wow.
Also, I also have a secret occult life that I need to keep under wraps.
Oh, yeah.
She says, I had it before you asked for the role, and I'll try to remember what she was going to respond.
Got him.
Yeah, got him. She says, well, we're going to look into it. We're not going to consider it closed until we wrap this all up. But what you're telling me is you truly believe that I'm not going to have another headless body turn up in this town, right? He's dead. It's over.
He's dead. I mean, there should be like a death certificate in this evidence. We could have forged that, you know, that with our... So it's like, not like, yeah. It's not like there is no body, it's just they don't have access to the body.
Well, here's the problem with that. I think, personally, and you tell me if you think I'm wrong, but like, I mean, this victim, this murderer of yours killed somebody on Thursday. You're saying that they killed the person, died, self-inflicted suicide. It was all figured out, and an official death certificate was released before the weekend. And
we have top men working on this job.
No, I think that he was involved with such the persona men. We made was involved with such top secret type of weapons development that maybe he got vaporized in a project that could never be discussed, like Manhattan Project 2019 edition, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they pushed this stuff out and got all the paperwork done right away, but then, like, redacted all of his files. I don't know if anyone else disagrees, but...
Okay, that's fine. Let's just move along. So,
yeah, don't worry, guys. You don't need to have all the details of your story, right? Goes into roleplay where he challenges all the details.
Hey, you're the one that brought up the family heirloom on a different case. Oh, so... she walks out, and you guys are free to go on your way.
I slash her tires
with the
throw the hubcaps in the back of her window,
and I rig the other cops car to explode when he turns the key in English.
It's really a wonder Delta Green hasn't had Roger assassinated, since he seems more like a reliability than an asset.
I
mean,
I think the only solution here is we have to kill both detectives. They know too much.
Yeah,
that definitely will diminish suspicion.
Yeah.
We'll pin it on Johnny Dangler.
The last two murders.
Is there anything else you want to do in the police station?
Is there any hacking or records we need to get to? I think we got everything, right?
We think we took care of that. With the
just re-looking over all of the notes. I think we're good, though.
I'd like to do a couple things, but they're all ridiculous. So let's move on.
Well, what do you want to do next?
I mean, what's left? We could try to wrap up this Thomas Dangler thing, or we could just leave it and let them run into a dead end.
How do we connect it?
I don't think we need to connect it. I think we just need to shut Thomas up. But or we could just let them do their investigations. They're never going to find anything.
Yeah, unless there were security cameras at the marina.
Were there security cameras at the marina, Joe?
I check if there's CCTV at the marina.
When you say they, who's the they you're talking about? You say they're never going to find anything. Who's the they? The cops. Okay.
Magdalena definitely does look into if there's security cameras and stuff at the marina.
CCTV at the marina?
Yeah, like, you know, a nearby bait shop's camera that points down, you know, something.
So where are you doing this? Are you leaving, going to a hotel, sitting in your car, on your laptop?
Yeah, I think from the car, if the team wants to come with me, I think maybe we'll do a loop around, like, that parking lot area, and I will just look and see as my laptop's open. Click, 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 click.
You're sitting there, click, 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 click. You don't see anything in... there's no CCTV that would be pointed in the area you were at the marina. There's no evidence that they have. It's sort of, you know, and anything you could get from her is just basically what Thomas had said about, you know, what he saw or heard. And so that's kind of the evidence that they're working off of.
Cool. I also asked Caesar if he can pull up his credit card statement just to show the purchase from B&H, but not an itemized receipt.
The problem is, and Caesar's been, I've been thinking about this, but I didn't know what happened in that room until now, and now's a good time to bring up. I didn't make a purchase at that time period. Is it something that with my 70 in accounting, and all my CEO of a startup of fudging records to look good for board members, that I could, like, create a timestamp and basically a transaction with B&H at that time? Or is it something more where I could forge something, or say that
Magdalena
I paid with cash?
Could make a Photoshop. I just figure, I who bought the stuff then?
Yeah, we bought stuff, but it just wasn't during the time.
Yeah, you know, it was what I much mean? Earlier.
There's going to have a B&H is going to have a receipt that says the date, time. So is the credit card.
Well, yeah, it's easy enough. With B&H, you can purchase online, and then you can just pick it up later. So
yeah, and they would have record of when you picked it up too. So.
Yeah, so I mean, basically, you could forge a receipt easily, a physical receipt, to make the actual transaction at B&H. You'd have to roll computers. You'd have to hack in and plant this transaction in their system.
Yeah, I'll just forge. I'll just forge a receipt in basic Photoshop.
Okay.
And say I paid in cash.
Yes.
All right. So you're going to forge a receipt and then what? Return to the police and just give it to them?
Yeah, we'll send an email.
Yeah, I'll send an email as if
send
I like
a picture of it. Send it in an email. Okay. Sounds good. So as you're sending this off, Roger, who you know has no interest in this, doesn't even care if there's this trail of evidence. He's just like, yeah, whatever. I'm just gonna kill all of them. He's sitting in the back of the van, and he looks out the window as you're parked here. Not van, sorry. Whatever it is, SUV. And he's sitting in the back, smoking a cigarette. And Roger, you look out the window, and with your alertness roll, you pick up something out of the corner of your eye, or not your roll, your score. You pick up something out of the corner of your eye, and you look closely, and you see right on the edge of the street. You're in town here. Right on the edge of the street is a news vendor, with a bunch of newspapers, magazines, chips, candies, whatever. You know, maybe he's like, maybe there's a Fifth Avenue there.
Exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah,
pull over.
You're looking out at it, and you notice on the rack you see a magazine. It says Inquirer, really big across the top of it, Long Island Inquirer, and you see the name Moretti emblazoned really large over it, and you see a picture that matches the picture you saw in the police file of that guy, who's the dentist, and you see it on this stand. Do you do anything?
Yeah, I'd be like, hey, pull over for a second, gotta grab something. I said pull over.
Caesar pulls the e-brake and we slide 180 degrees into the newsstand.
E-brake stop.
He hops out, walks over, grabs a copy of the magazine, and then looks to see if there is a Fifth Avenue bar.
There is a Fifth Avenue bar.
He smiles. He reaches down and grabs it. And then he grabs a second one for later. Lays them on the counter.
Do you take checks down? Yeah, what's that?
Do you take personal checks? If not, my grandmother gave me a savings bond 25 years ago. I'm sure we can work something out.
Nah, bro. I'm gonna need cash. Cash only, buddy.
Yeah, no paper trail. I get it. All right. He puts $1,000 bill down.
Don't got change for this. Get the fuck out of here, you joker.
It's probably because it's not real. Here. 20.
All right. It's more like it. And he'll give you change. And as you're walking back to the car, you can take a look at the cover of this magazine, and I'd like to direct everybody's attention to Roll 20.
Ooh.
Oh, man. And you can actually see the tabloid.
Oh, my God.
Oh.
Whoa.
Would you have been furious if I just said, nah, just keep driving?
No. No, not at all.
I studiously avoid the newspaper.
I mean, this thing's wow. It's a lot of work. Whoa. So tell everybody what you see.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no. You guys, man.
Tell everybody what you see.
Platypus. Can we trust them? Worse than you think. Inside.
Oh, man. Well, it does say at the top, breaking news, psychic Capaldi, Moretti speaks, headless dentist, tell all. So there's a man with a goatee in the corner whose name is Capaldi, and he says, I can help feds crack the case. This is bad.
Kind of looks like David Blaine. Yeah. He's got a Vegas magician feel to him.
The thing I'm most upset by is the little bubble down the bottom. Inside, truth about NASA/FBI cover-up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because that's the big front page is idyllic coastal town rocked by mystery alien serial killer. Glenridge Cairo strikes again. And there's a bunch of the pictures of the victims. and a picture of an Incan ritual looks like.
It says, G-Men head to Peru for answers. Ancient Incan ET worshipping death cult to blame?
Well, the G-Men are headed to Peru for answers, I guess, and we'll pick up there next time.
I'm so excited.